brought to you by Black Knight. It's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 33 for June 14th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conal Muinichon. Dias Maria agus Céad Fáilte roimh isteach. Hello and welcome to Technology.ie. In the Technology.ie studio, this is Conal Muinichon. We go on Skype over the internets, calling Michaela. Michaela, come in.
Hi, Con. How's it going?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm not too bad. It's been an interesting day.
And where are you?
Nowhere exciting this week, I'm sorry to report.
Back at base. Back from. Was it Arizona you were in last week? It
was. Yes, actually. I was in Arizona last week in the middle of the desert, and you know, 48 hours later, I was standing in Carlo, where in the pouring rain.
Back to your roots again. It's June 13th when we're recording this. June 13th, 2012, a day that will live. Well, no, let's not overreact in relation to how we describe it, but certainly a big day in the world of generic top-level domains. That is going to be what we're going to talk about. Michaela, you've brought a friend this week. Introduce me, please.
We've got Kelly Hardy on as a special guest this week. I'll let Kelly explain what she does and who she is.
Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Con. Thank you.
Where are you in the world?
I'm in Los Angeles, California.
Okay. Are you a native?
I am.
Okay. And tell me what you do and a bit about yourself.
Okay. I have been working with the GTLDs and in the domain space for the last 8 years. Been a consultant for the last four. I've worked in brand protection. I've worked in GTLDs and CCTLDs. I do policy. I do marketing and PR. I do PR for Black Knight.
Excellent. And I've seen your work and read it and enjoyed it as well, Kelly. And of course, you have a particular interest in today's announcement as well, with all that interest in GTLDs. What's your impression? What did you think of it today?
It was really exciting to see the list. We've been waiting for years for this day to come. So it was really, yeah, there were some surprises on the list of new GTLDs that will be released possibly in 2013.
Possibly. Of course, it's not the final list. There's a process to be gone through. We'll discuss that as well. And we'll go into detail, I think, talking about all of the news that has come out today in relation to this in part two of the show. Briefly, Michaela, what's your first impression from today?
Confusion in some respects, because the list itself is really, really long.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to look at it using Excel. I've got somebody else I think is going to import into a database so we can play with it a number of different ways. There's some surprises. There's a few that we knew about. There's a few names missing that are quite a big surprise. And there's a lot more contention around some of the applications than we might have expected.
Well, we're going to go into that in detail, as I say, in part two of the show. The show is technology.ie. That's the website as well. It's just been upgraded, Michaela, you were telling us.
Yeah, WordPress 3.4 was released within the last hour or two. So rather than sit around in our hands waiting, we upgraded immediately.
Very good.
And the website's still functioning.
So WordPress 3.4, what are the main features of it, or what do you think is interesting in it?
Well, WordPress has been upgrading them, you know, doing upgrades fairly regularly over the last year or two. This time round, they're focusing on theme customization. Mm-hmm. So if you're a designer, you'll get more tools to play with to more easily customize the look and feel of your WordPress installs. There's also a thing where they're doing more with Twitter, so you can embed tweets more easily. Because at the moment, in the older versions of WordPress, you could grab a HTML snippet from the Twitter web interface, but now they've made that a lot easier. And there's also some improvements around image captions. Now, a lot of other stuff is kind of under the hood, and it's really going to be for, you know, hardcore developers, not for kind of normal users.
Do I detect a trend with WordPress in recent months and years, Michele, of supporting stuff natively that perhaps would once have been done by plugins, that would have been done by third-party add-ins or plugins into WordPress? Things like image support, things like, as you say, Twitter support and things like that. It is it's making for... In a way, some of the plugins that can be kind of hit and miss when you go to a plugin, you know, it's not necessarily, they're not always well supported. It's not always easy to see whether something is of good quality or not. And I notice increasingly that stuff is being implemented natively, as we say, in the main WordPress install. But that comes at a price as well. I find there's an overhead, there's a delay when it comes to loading up your dashboard or whatever. I find the back end, the user interface of WordPress has got kind of sluggish with recent releases.
Well, it's, you know, the six of one, half dozen of the other.
Yeah.
I mean, the as you said, like with the plugins, there was a lot of inconsistency. Some plugin developers are highly professional. The code they produce is top class. The plugins they are you know, consistently supported. If there are any security issues, they're dealt with quickly. Whereas other ones, no. I mean, they're badly written. Their code, I mean, let's face it, their code is really, really bad. Mm. And a lot of the time you find that when WordPress installs are hacked, it's not the WordPress core code that's the problem. It's some third-party plugin. Mm. Mm. You know, I mean, obviously the perspective I take on this is going to be slightly different to an end user. I mean, I look at it in terms of, you know, the thousands of WordPress installs we have across our network and the kind of issues we face when somebody compromises something, like, say, for example, Tim Thumb last year, which led to hundreds of thousands of WordPress installs worldwide being defaced. Mm. So I welcome them folding the kind of functionality that a lot of users want into the core. But of course, there is going to be that toss-up. I mean, it might lead to certain things being a little bit slower to render. They're using probably slightly heavier HTML and everything else within the dashboard. Mm. But, you know, you're getting greater functionality, possibly greater ease of use. So, I mean, I think it's a good compromise.
For a long time, it's been the open source free content management system for bloggers in particular of choice, Michele. Does it still have that status? Has the shine gone off it a little bit?
It's still the most popular one out there. I mean, you know, several years ago, Movable Type dominated the space. Along came WordPress, and there's been a few other ones as well. But WordPress really came to dominate. And at this stage now, I don't know what the percentages are like. I'm sure somebody somewhere has some figures. But, you know, it is the CMS of choice for a lot of blogs and websites that aren't just blogs. I mean, you can run a normal, in inverted commas, website using WordPress on the back end if you so wish.
Are you a WordPress user, Kelly?
I am, although I'm not nearly as savvy as Michele.
And I'm not that savvy, really. I'm just a little bit, I know a little bit, enough to cause trouble.
Where can people find you online, by the way, Kelly? I presume you're on Twitter and things like that. Do you have a particular site or blog or anything like that?
I don't have my own at the moment, but I am very active on Twitter, @Kelly_Hardy.
Let's move on. Apple's WWDC conference was held this week. It's Apple's big event of the year now, really, isn't it? And some people are saying perhaps that it wasn't quite as exciting as it would be. There isn't a new iPhone, for example. There isn't that one more thing that Steve Jobs would have had. Or what do you think? Is the criticism misplaced, Michele?
Well, I mean, come on, you know, they're always going to compare Apple now with Apple during the Steve Jobs era. That's not going to go away. And they're going to be trying to draw those comparisons for the next 10 years, probably.
Well, let's run down through it. What was announced this week? The major announcement was the MacBook Pro, which is getting very close to being like a MacBook Air, but with major functionality and a seriously impressive Retina display.
Well, it's not just what they announced, it's also what they got rid of.
Which was?
The 17-inch MacBook Pro.
That's right, and it's been replaced by a 15-inch one. So less screen real estate, but more resolution. What do you think of that?
This is the kind of thing you're seeing more and more of. I mean, you're packing more and more functionality and power into a smaller space. Mm-hmm. I mean, a 17-inch, it's more than a desktop replacement. I mean, it's a great big hulking lump of metal to be lugging around the place. I mean, I'm using a 13-inch MacBook Air these days, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I've used it the last few times I've gone off on business trips, and I haven't missed my 15-inch MacBook Pro. I don't miss having to lug around the weight with me.
Yeah, I guess that's the lesson that iPad has certainly helped to teach us in that as well, is that you reduce that screen area, you also reduce the weight that you have to carry around, and it's a trade-off that's well worthwhile. I know at one point I went for a great big ugly hulking Dell Vostro with a 17-inch display, and I literally couldn't open it on a train, for example. There wasn't room on the table.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it's you've got the weight problem. I mean, for me, I'm sure Kelly's had the same experience. You know, you go to a tech conference. If you're really, really, really lucky, you're moving from, your hotel room downstairs into a room, and you're there for the day. So you can just, park your stuff there, and you don't have to move around. But a lot of the time, you're moving from one room to another, and that laptop that was relatively comfortable to carry around at 8:30 in the morning, come 4 o'clock in the afternoon, your shoulders are in agony, and you just want to throw the damn thing in the bin.
What do you think, Kelly? What do you use, for example, yourself?
I have a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and I have an 11-inch MacBook Air. An 11-inch Air, mm-hmm. And it's the Air is the only computer that I use now. It's fantastic. I find that looking at a larger screen is almost disorienting now. And it is, I agree with Michaela, it's so wonderful to travel with. I mean, the difference in weight is, it's night and day. But it's also, it's discreet. So if you want to, open your computer up on an airplane, you don't have to worry about everyone on the plane seeing what you're doing. It's very, very cool. That was a really exciting, part of the announcement.
Are you going to be looking forward to upgrading now to the 15-inch MacBook Pro?
You know what? I don't think so. I mean, my Air is fairly new, and I don't know that I'm going to upgrade to a larger. I think I might go down to 13.
What about the device in your pocket? iOS 6 announced with updates for iOS devices. A lot of new features in there, a lot of fairly significant things. Changes to the mapping, for example. Google Maps is out, and it looks like the Apple Maps they're using are going to be based on, is it TomTom's Maps or something like that? I heard somebody say today.
Well, I mean, the thing with a lot of with Google Maps versus other maps, I mean, there's, Google Maps was free, but Google started charging for it a few months ago. So that might be one of the drivers behind them dumping it. I don't know that for a fact, but I suspect you're going to see more and more of that where, people are moving to a cheaper alternative. I don't know. I mean, the problem with a lot of these features is they really come into their own when you're outside Ireland. So if you're in the US, like Kelly, she has full access to a whole range of cool stuff on a mobile device. If you're in Ireland, you simply don't. Mm. I mean, I was in Arizona last week, and Foursquare was able to give me things like the menus of restaurants. You don't get that over here.
What they're doing now is they're integrating so much more into Siri, apparently, with this new release as well. And it's going to work with, is it Yelp, is it, and several other services like that as well, to give you that kind of, those kind of services, those kind of local services as well. Are you, Kelly, what do you, I presume you're an iPhone user?
I am.
Are you excited by any of these iOS 6 announcements?
I'm excited by the eyes-free Siri integration into automobiles, definitely.
That's right. Tell me about that. What's involved there?
So Apple is working with, I believe it's 10 or 11 different car manufacturers to integrate Siri into your driving experience. So Siri can now read, text messages to you and emails and go through Yelp and that sort of thing without you having to take your eyes off the wheel, basically.
makes sense. But this is the kind of work that Ford have already been doing with their MyFord Touch and these services that they've been building into the latest Fords as well. So it's a good question. I mean, is this going to come top down from you know, a manufacturer, a device manufacturer like Apple, or is this the kind of thing that car manufacturers want to integrate or want to develop their own proprietary technology? Looks like there could be a battle of standards or a battle of technologies coming up here.
Absolutely.
What do you think about this, Michaela? Do you want to talk to your car?
Not really, no. I mean, the problem with some of these things is, you know, while I can see the attraction for people who buy new cars, that's not me. I mean, I will quite happily drive a car until it falls apart, or, you know, stop or starts failing NCTs and things like that. So for me, you know, that it's nice if you're one of those people who goes off and buys a new car every couple of years, but it's not going to have any impact on me for the next couple of years until my car fails the NCT.
So while you do the latest tech, and I know you're interested in the latest laptops and iPhones and devices like that, that tech fascination doesn't extend to four wheels on the road for you, Michaela?
Not at all. Absolutely. I've absolutely no interest in cars. I mean, sure, you know, you show me a Lamborghini or, you know, some other super duper thing like a Bugatti or whatever, and I will go, wow, that is a beautiful, beautiful car. But I'm not interested in spending huge amounts of money on a car.
Well, I got to say, I'm not either, Michaela. But what I am interested in is the kind of thing that Kelly is talking about here as well, which is the fact that, to be honest, and I think you know, it's something I make no secret of. I hate driving. I consider time spent behind the wheel wasted unless I can find, and I'd much rather take the train or do something else. And if I can't have my eyes on a book or on a page or my hands on a keyboard or be engaged in something useful and productive from that point of view while I'm travelling, if I've got to have my hands on the wheel and my eyes on the road, then I do want to get it through my ears, and I want to get it in a way that basically that get the information that I want. So, and I mean, I know, for example, Chris Byrne, for example, who is a regular listener to technology.ie, has talked about how he queues up technology.ie and other podcasts as well for his road trips. And I'd be the same. I would have a number of podcasts that I would listen to when I'm traveling. But again, I find I'm fiddling around with line outs, with headphone jacks, and jacking things into the radio, or in one car, in my wife's car. And if I'm using my own car, I'm actually my own radio doesn't even support Bluetooth or anything like that, and I'm plugging it in with I'm using. Did you ever use one of those little FM transmitters, Michaela? That you?
Can, oh, I had one of those. I mean, I think I still have it, but the one I had used to burn through batteries.
You want to be able to say, Siri, change the channel, or, you know, turn off technology.ie, turn on something else, give me a different podcast, read me the latest financial news, check my email, reply to my text messages. That's really, you know, that's not too much to ask.
Calm, yeah. The thing is this. I mean, look, you know, if I would break Siri with my inbox.
Yeah.
My inbox would kill that. I mean, no matter what kind of art, I can't even manage it using my own intelligence, never mind artificial intelligence. Yeah. You know, so I, you know, look, you might do a lot of these things in a car. For me, no, I don't see the interest. Mm. I'm much more likely to try and put aside a couple of quid so I can get myself a new home receiver for my home cinema setup. You know, that's where I spend my money. I mean, I can appreciate it. Sure, some people like that, like putting stuff into cars. Mm. Me personally, no interest.
Let's lighten things up a bit, Michaela. You've posted a few links here. First of all, you've said cooltoolcamerasim.com. What is it?
This is something that James sent to me yesterday or the day before. It's a camera simulator. Now, that may sound like a kind of an odd concept, but what it's for is for those of us who like the idea of taking photographs, but don't really understand the finer points of SLRs. So you can go online to the website, you can go into the DSLR camera simulator, and you can then play around with some of the settings. And these are like the settings you'd have on on a digital SLR and then take a photograph. I mean, the one they have in the demo was of a little girl with a, you know, quite colourful kind of background and everything else. So you can tweak the settings, take a photograph virtually, and it will tell you whether you've underexposed it, overexposed it, etc., etc., etc. So you can just play around. So, and there's also desktop apps and iPad apps and everything else. I just thought to myself, this is kind of cool because
it is.
Because I don't understand all these things about f-stops and focal lengths and shutter speeds and all that kind of thing. I mean, people have tried to explain this to me for years, but the ones who explain it to me are all camera geeks, and they talk to me about things in a language I just don't understand.
But it's one of those things, Michele, you will never understand it if all they do is tell you about it, unless they show you about it. And in fact, there's a quote from Confucius to that effect on the front page of camerasim.com. Tell me and I will forget, show me and I may remember, involve me and I will understand, attributed to Confucius in 450 BC. But it's a simple thing. You learn by doing. I don't think I've ever learned anything except by actually putting it into practice.
For somebody like me who likes taking photographs, I mean, I'm not going to spend hours playing with this thing. But at the same time, even playing around for 5 or 10 minutes, I can learn quite a bit.
You might even then decide, well, you know, I can see what this is for. I may actually go and buy a camera like that. What about you, Kelly? Are you one of these people who understands what all the settings on cameras are about and filters and exposure and shutter speeds and things like that?
I do. I'm an old SLR user.
Oh, very
so
good.
This website is actually really, really appealing.
But for you, there's probably nothing to learn, or is there?
I think that you know, practicing composing shots and whatnot is good for anybody at any level of camera use. It's exciting. It's a lot of fun. It's a really low stakes way to just play around with your photos. It's super cool.
Well, I'm like Michele when it comes to cameras. I'm a point and click kind of a person, but certainly that is the kind of thing which might actually change my view on that. We're going to go and focus on the main event that we want to talk about in this week.
Well, can we just have one last one there?
We will, and we also want to find out about Black Knight's special offer or special promotion of the week. But what's this about Twitter business cards?
Now this, I thought, look, this is so simple. It's absolutely brilliant. If you have a look at the link, I mean, which we can include on the site afterwards, you know the way you can use Moo to print cards and other things for you?
Moo.com.
Yeah, Moo.com. So what he did is, this guy who, I think he's some kind of social media or social networking or something type who gives training courses and everything else, what he'd noticed was that people were giving feedback on Twitter about, you know, what they'd learned from talking to him and interacting with him and everything else. So what he did is he did screen grabs of some of the favorite tweets that he got in reply, like, kind of, you know, basically reviews, imported them all into his Flickr account, went on to Moo.com and pointed the Moo.com service at the Flickr set and created a bunch of business cards with these tweets as the kind of feedback on there. I mean, it's really, really simple. Really, really simple. If you actually go onto the link there, you can see some of them. So, like, you know, you've got these things like, you know, too many ideas, too little time. So one side of the card is the tweet and the other side would have his contact details.
So these are customer testimonials, which, you know, and we see a lot of this, people who are marketing and promoting and dealing with customers online and in particular through Twitter. You'll see people often say, had a great day at Michele Nealon's presentation this morning, really enjoyed Kelly Hardy's seminar and workshop on XYZ. And so you essentially, you know, this is customer testimonials, this is tweets, this is positive reviews, and why not turn them into business cards?
Yeah, and I just thought to myself, you know, it's very simple, it's genuine, it's not like some of this rubbish you see on websites where it's like, you know, oh, wonderful service, and then a happy customer. It's like, what the hell is that? You know, this is from, you know, real people It's unfiltered. It's, I mean, obviously it's going to take out the stuff where they're using all sorts of expletives, I assume, but you know, it's real, it's genuine.
It's another example, I suppose, of matching different types of media together in a way that's appropriate, Kelly, isn't it? I mean, you wouldn't fit a Google Plus post on the back of a business card or a Facebook post or update, status update, but your 140 character limit, that and also those, I suppose, those nice little slim moo business cards, they kind of go well together, don't they?
They do. This is super cool. It's really tough to differentiate yourself on a business card. You know, business cards are archaic and they're boring, but they're incredibly necessary. And I would be incredibly excited to receive a card with tweets on the back that were entertaining me as well as reminding me who the person is.
Well, it's certainly different, without a doubt, and stands out from the usual shuffled deck of business cards you end up with after an event. Michele, talk to us about Black Knight this week, domains hosting. What is it that you want to promote and talk about?
Well, it's the same stuff as EverCon. I mean, the big thing we're pushing at the moment is .co. Because, you know, .co has become, for many, it's the alternative extension for the hip-hop and happening startups. And as we mentioned before, LeWeb has switched over to using leweb.co. And we're one of the few companies on the face of the planet that has actually got a direct partnership with Co Internet. So I'm really happy about that. And that's something we're going to be pushing more and more of in the coming weeks. And we're still doing offers on a few other extensions. If you head over to our blog or go to domainoffers.me, you can find details on our current offers.
Have you still got the GoMobi mobile website builder? Is that still on a 30-day special offer?
Oh, it is, of course.
It is,
yeah.
And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, because I've got a project. I'll tell you again about it some other time, but there's a project which I was discussing with someone this week, and I thought, aha, I know just the solution for that. So I'm probably going to be signing up for that 30-day free trial as well. You can find out more about that and .co and lots of other special offers, and especially what's topical at blacknight.com, or in particular on the blog at blog.blacknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to the Technology.ie podcast. My name is Conor Muinichon. I'm here every week. So too is Black Knight CEO Michele Nealon. Hi, Michele.
Hi, how's it going, Con?
And our guest this week, Kelly Hardy, domain expert, Kelly, policy and public relations person. How else should we describe you?
That pretty much covers it.
You're a domainer, Kelly. How do you understand that term, or what does being a domainer mean? What's the domain world all about in your view?
Oh, I'm actually not a domainer.
No?
I only have, you know, I've probably got maybe 15 domain names. A domainer is typically someone who has a portfolio of thousands of names, in some cases hundreds of thousands of names, who monetizes that portfolio and sort of makes a living off of the trading and building out of domains.
But you have particular expertise in GTLDs. Tell me a bit about that and who you've worked for and what you've done.
Okay. I've been involved in the space for 8 years in a variety of capacity. And I'm currently consulting on GTLDs and CCTLDs, and I've been doing new GTLDs since 2008. I am currently working with .pro and .me, and I work with them in a marketing capacity, marketing and public relations and business development.
So what do you see the importance of today's announcement, today's reveal by ICANN of the, what are we talking about, well over 1,000, is it? It's somewhere between 1 and 2,000 applicants for new generic top-level domains.
I believe it's 1,930.
Wow.
I'm double-checking that. Hold on. Got a spreadsheet here. I think it's 1,930 sounds right.
Wow. What do you think is the significance of this, Kelly? What is this going to lead to? Is this going to transform? I asked Michele this last week. Is this going to transform the internet as we know it?
I think that it's going to transform the way users interact with the internet. I think it's going to, you know, depending on how many of these TLDs actually make it into the root in 2013. Fingers crossed that it will happen in 2013. It will completely change, if it's a large number, it's going to completely change the way the end user conduct search, the way that you think of the way that you spatially think of the internet will change dramatically.
And obviously dramatically, because you're going from what, 22 generic top level domains at present?
22, and if we're in the US, one, because com is pretty much all that's on people's minds here, which hopefully will be changing very soon.
And what do you to explain the process, Kelly or Michele, either one of you, what actually happened today? I know that there was an application window that was open and that closed, and it closed much later, obviously, than it was suspended then for a month, of course. But that closed, I think, what, last week, 2 weeks ago? What actually happened today? We got to see, is it all of the applications for new generic top-level domains? Is that what was announced today?
Yeah, basically. I mean, what that it's every single application that was submitted, paid for, and everything, and you know, valid applications.
So everything
these have not been evaluated.
Okay.
This is the raw data.
So, what happens now? What is the these are the ones that have been validly applied for? How are they going to be evaluated? On what grounds? You know. Are they going to be?
There's more to it than that, Colm.
What happens?
Well, the big problem is that ICANN has decided that they can only handle 500 extensions per batch. Now, of the 1,900 plus applications, there's a reasonably large number where there's more than one application. More than one applicant. So, for example, in the case of .app, there's 13. So 13 separate applications for the one domain extension. And there can only be one domain extension. You can't have two .apps or two .cloud or two .free or two .game or two Well, I don't know what other ones are there where there's multiple applicants. World, for example, or WoW. There's a lot of these ones where there's multiple applications. So there's a whole range of things going on here. There's what I think we touched on the digital archery very briefly.
No, that was mentioned. I think when that was mentioned recently on the podcast, and we never actually went into it. You guys mentioned it. You and who was the guest we had on that was talking about digital archery?
It could have been Francesco, maybe.
It was, yes. That's all I heard, the term. What does it mean?
Kelly, do you want to try and explain this one?
I'm going to give this to you.
Thanks.
My response will be indecipherable.
Yeah, I mean, that actually probably is the best response in many respects. I mean, if you think, okay, let's put this into context. Like, Kelly's been following new TLDs since 2008, or possibly before then. It's now 2012, so that's over 4 years. There's other people who've been trying to apply for, to get things like .web and .mail up and running for way longer. So, I mean, in some cases, you're talking about people doing it for the last, I don't know, let's say more than 10 years. So this is something which didn't happen overnight. This is a long time coming. For some of these people, for some of these companies, it's, you know, they've been working on this for years. They've invested in it heavily. So ICANN then decided a couple of months ago that they had this problem. They could only batch so many in per round, and that they had to come up with a method for choosing which applications went into each round. So rather than using a lottery, rather than using a first-come, first-served, they came up with this brilliant, in very large inverted commas, concept called digital archery. And to be perfectly honest, though I've sat through I don't know how many meetings and I've read I don't know how many emails, read I don't know how many blog posts on this, I still have difficulty getting my head around it completely. It's this rather convoluted thing where you as the applicant, you go in and you choose a target time. At least I think that's my understanding of it. And then you have to try to hit that target time on some web interface. Like basically clicking a button. And if you can click the button as close to the target time that you've chosen, you might get into that round. At least that's my understanding of it, and it's a very bad explanation of it.
No, that was actually very elegant. I think most explanations of it would just be, you know, muffled screams. So, quite well.
Wait a minute. You guys are joking me, right? This isn't how they're deciding who gets into which batch.
Yeah, they are. That's what they're doing.
I'm looking at the new gtlds.icann.org website at the moment, and there's /applicants/TAS/batching/basics to give you the full path to it. And it says something about you pick a date and time, then you try and click a button as close to that date and time as you can. It's like rolling a dice or something?
Yeah, basically.
This is the most extraordinary thing I've ever. Oh, it's very weird. So this is a bit like doing a lottery or something, except they get you to roll the dice or spin the wheel yourself.
Pretty much. I mean, there's this entire thing about the secondary timestamp, which caused lots of confusion for everybody because they came out with a secondary timestamp concept, but never explained to anybody. Well, they did now, but you know, they didn't explain to anybody for weeks what the hell they were talking about.
Okay, so this decides what? Let's just say, so they get you to play an online game, as far as I can see. This decides what? When you get, what batch you get into, is that it?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, let's leave that aside. How are they going to go and resolve the situation where multiple entities and organisations have applied for the same generic top-level domain?
I'll let Kelly take that one.
It goes to auction.
Okay.
And basically, the applicant with the largest purse has the best chance. That's not the definitive. I don't believe that is the definitive means of choice, but that is the most likely means of choice.
You know, today's event for a lot of people was another high point. But for some of us who are a little bit more cynical, we're kind of thinking, well, hold on a second. Mm. In many respects, this is actually a low point because once you see how many people are applying for the same string, then it doesn't take much to realize that it's going to be very, very hard for a lot of these strings to become available for anybody to register for quite a long time. I mean, don't worry about the dot brands. They're not contended. So, I mean, there is contention around one or two. But for the most part, a dot Canon or a dot Panasonic, there's only one application. And one could argue that whether Canon gets dot Canon in 6 months' time or in 3 years' time won't make a huge difference. But let's take, for example, say dot Green. There's four separate applications for that. And while some of the entities involved might have quite deep pockets, not all of them do.
It's interesting as well that there are some different approaches. Amazon, for example, have applied for an extraordinary amount of new generic top level domains, and some of them related to some of their brands, and some of them not. There's a dot Kindle, I think, in among them, and dot a few other things as well. And then on the other side of the fence, Michele, you point out that Twitter in particular, Facebook in particular, didn't apply for anything.
Yeah, they didn't join the party.
How do you read that?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways you can read it. I mean, Facebook were pretty consistent about this. They said that they weren't going to get involved. They've been following ICANN, the new TLDs, for a very, very long time. They know what's going on. They know what the possibilities are, what the challenges are. So that decision is something that they made, you know, I'd say based on good information. They didn't, you know, they weren't relying on some third party just to say, hey, this is a good idea, hey, this is a bad idea. But it is a strange one. I guess
they say this isn't their game, is the way they probably look at it, that this whole area of domains and domain extensions isn't what they're all about. And yet this is a game, is it not, Michele, which could become very, very significant indeed. For example, there's a very bold play on behalf of that donut company, which has applied to hopefully register 307 is what they've actually put in for. And if they're successful in a certain number of those, those. And if each one of those domain extensions becomes lucrative in a certain significant proportion of them become lucrative in some ways, that could turn into a very big business, and a business which could even rival the kind of big things we're talking about right now, or things like Facebook and Twitter. We could be talking about GTLD giants as being significant business, major players and serious investments in years to come.
Well, I'd let Kelly answer some of that. I mean, I think she might be in a better position to talk about it. I mean, personally, yeah, I would agree that, you know, Facebook and a couple of these others probably just went, well, no, it's not really our space. I mean, the other argument one could put forward is that in many respects, Facebook wants you on Facebook. They don't want you on .blog. They don't want you on .web. They want you on Facebook.com.
But this is what you're talking about, Kelly, is when you say that this could transform the internet. This could be a whole new game.
It could be, but you know, the old rules of branding still apply, and Facebook has branded themselves as Facebook.com, and I don't think things like that are going to change. But I think that new GTLDs are going to offer totally different branding opportunities, but I don't think it's going to affect existing TLDs. I think Facebook is, you know, fine right where they are. I think it's smart of them not to get involved at this point, because, you know, unless they're building out, you know, an internal network on .Facebook, there really isn't any need for them to do it necessarily with the services that they offer. I mean, you could argue the opposite as well. But I don't think it's going to kill their business to not have a new GTLD. It's, you know, on the flip side, it's a really good opportunity for other brands to sort of to up their game. And a lot of those brands are applicants. And I think that they are going to see greater success with this sort of branding.
What stood out for you today, Kelly? Were there surprises? Were there things that you were pleased to see, or was there anything that you thought was particularly significant?
I was very excited to see how many brands have gotten new GTLDs and are moving forward and believe in the idea and are willing to double down on it. It was very, very cool. There were a lot of luxury brands. There were a lot of up and coming. I saw a net-a-porter.com registered or applied for their own GTLD, and they're an online retailer, and they do very well, and they're very well known. But it was interesting to see that they were taking the leap into new GTLDs, as well as a lot of, you know, older brands like Chanel and Chloe and Bugatti and. A lot of very interesting branding going on.
On the other hand, Michele, Business Insider, Owen Thomas, writing in businessinsider.com, says it's going to be a disaster. Google, Facebook and Twitter will be the only winners in the coming domain name disaster.
I think he's being a little bit cynical and a bit narrow-minded about the entire thing. I mean, I would look at it in terms of, you know, like what Kelly's saying. You know, for some of the brands, they can do a lot of cool things with their own TLD. I mean, like, say, take for example Pfizer. I mean, Pfizer, what do Pfizer make? They make Viagra. And if you look around online, there's so many Viagra-related domains. There's so much fake Viagra being sold online. You know, Pfizer can now have put everything under .Pfizer. There's other ones there, other big brands like Panasonic for .Panasonic. Then you've got the cities like .Paris. There should be a .London in there somewhere. There is a lot of .London. There's a .Barcelona. There's a bunch of other ones for cities. And I think, you know, this offers a city a lot of really cool possibilities. Like, I think we might have touched on this in the past. I mean, the idea, say, with .nyc, you could have, say, pizzas.nyc, which would be a portal to every single pizza place in New York, or taxis.nyc, giving you a listing of all the taxi companies in New York.
Yeah, we talked about that, and we talked about, I suppose, ethnic and cultural groups and the opportunities for linguistic groups or for nations that aren't associated with countries, for example, to be able to have their own top-level domain, you know, nations that aren't eligible, let's say, for a country code or whatever that might be. All of the possibilities that are there from that point of view. There's a .Irish in among the applications, Michele, I see, but no .Ireland.
Well, .Ireland wouldn't have been allowed.
Okay.
You could, .Ireland wouldn't be allowed because there were certain rules around geographics like that. So .Ireland would immediately have been put to one side, unless, of course, the Irish government were to apply for it. I think they'd have been allowed.
Okay, and in relation to .London, for example, or .NYC, it is the actual authorities in those cities which are allowed to apply for those. Is that correct?
Like, yes.
Okay, and so there isn't a .Dublin or .Cork. I saw you quoted in, I saw the question put, I think, in a post on Silicon Republic, I think, today. You were saying that there simply wouldn't be the demand for that.
No, I mean the certain amount of basic economics. If you you can try and run the figures whichever way you want, but let's say you got $185,000 to apply for a new TLD. You've got about $25,000 a year that you'd have to pay to ICANN as an ongoing fee just to run your domain extension. You're going to have to pay staff, you're going to have to probably pay somebody to run the back end for you. In other words, the registry operations, like, we talked to affiliates before. So there's lots of other costs with that. So in order for your TLD to be anyway successful, it needs to have a certain number of registrations. I mean, you're not going to do that unless you're a big brand who can afford to do it, or you think you're going to have enough registrations to make it viable economically. And let's face it, you take the Irish market, there's less than 200,000 .ie domains registered. I just don't think there's the demand there for it.
Well, what about the opportunities for Ireland in general here, Michele? I mean, you mentioned affiliates who have their global headquarters in Dublin and who are obviously going to be part of what's going on here and offering services. Is there an Irish, for example, in relation to Black Knight? What's this going to mean for your business, Michele?
Well, that is something which I've spent most of today looking. I spent most of today looking at those lists, trying to work out how things are going to pan out. And, let's be honest, I don't have all the answers.
Mm. It's going to be a very big drop-down list box of potential...
This is a real challenge. And how on earth is somebody... you've got to remember, first of all, the .brand applications, they're going to be closed. You're not going to be able to go off and register a .Panasonic or something like that, because that's going to only be available to that company to control. And how they distribute the names is going to be up to them to decide. But when you look at all the other, the generics, the open ones, the .city ones, which will probably be semi-open, the cultural linguistic, which again will be open in some shape or form, for a registrar like ourselves, we're going to have to look at what applications are getting processed, which ones are going to be likely to go live within the next 12 to 18, 24 months, and then decide which ones of those we're going to carry. And I'm not going to carry all of them. No way. Can't. Not a possibility. No hope in hell. No point.
Any other thoughts on this, Kelly? What do you see happening now, or what? Any other thoughts about today?
Sorry, I have a very angry dog in the background.
Is that what it is?
It's a small chihuahua that's losing its mind. I definitely see both sides of the argument, both sides of the coin here. But I think that ultimately this is a good thing. I think that ultimately lots and lots and lots of people, lots of brands, lots of communities are going to benefit from this. And I'm incredibly excited that it's finally happening. And now the hard part starts. All of these applicants, who make it to delegation are going to have to learn, are going to have to launch and run a registry. And, some of them have not done that before. So that's going to be very, very interesting for them.
When are we going to start seeing some of these, what kind of timeline are we talking about in this process?
Well, I believe, I actually have a timeline with me. We're in the objection period right now that immediately followed the reveal. In July, initial evaluation begins. So that's going to encompass batching and that whole business. And in December of 2012, January of 2013, we're going to see the results of the initial evaluation. So we'll start to find out, you know, who is most likely to make it in. And during that time period, the additional program phases are also going to come into play. So we have a lot of bureaucracy to look forward to, basically.
So the first of them from what? From early to mid 2013, is it?
Right.
Possibly.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem. I mean, look at what happened in the past. I mean, take Doctel as an example. They were going full ahead, everything was going great, but they ended up running into issues around who is, which I think delayed them by about 6 months or something. Mm. And there's, you know, other ones where, you know, .XXX, where there was massive contention and huge debates, and there were court cases and God knows what else around it. So that took, what, 10 years nearly? So, you know, you'd have to be a little bit cynical and kind of go, well, you know, 2013, maybe. When in 2013? Hard to say.
It's really a question of how well, if at all, this process can scale.
Definitely.
Yeah. To accommodate a huge number of new generic top-level domains. Well, it's going to be interesting, without a doubt, and it's certainly an eye-opener to talk to two people such as yourselves who have the inside track and know an awful lot more, indeed, than I do about all of this. Kelly, do go and bring your chihuahua for a walk, and thank you very much indeed for joining us on technology.ie this week. Kelly Hardy, where can people find you online or on Twitter or whatever?
You can find me on Twitter at Kelly_Hardy or on about.me at about.me/Kelly Hardy.
Okay, Kelly, thanks a lot. And thanks for joining us on technology.ie. You can find me on Twitter at Conn. Michele, where will we find you?
Everywhere.
In the kitchen at parties?
Yeah, how did you know? No, you'd find me at MNalen on Twitter. And I also sometimes appear behind the Black Knight Twitter account and various other places.
Indeed, with your award-winning corporate social media strategy. Michele Nealon and Kelly Hardy, thanks indeed for joining us. And thanks you to the listener. You can find out about what we do at technology.ie. Leave us a comment, retweet us, social media us, do whatever you like, but please do come back again next week. Until then, slongafore.